If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Debi Singh Dubazana is here on her legal matters feature. And this is one of those times where you can call in and get free consultations. 086-00-00959. Send those voice notes as well. 063-688-0959. We are... And listen, we're going to kick off with a conversation, but that doesn't mean that's the only thing we can discuss. As I said, this is absolutely open for any of your legal matters. And Thabiso, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Osphamelo. Good to see you again.
Lovely having you. Okay. I want us to talk about this case. And I think we may have touched on something similar before on labor matters.
Yes.
And what actually may work in your favor or may not work in your favor. Let's talk about this case that you've got in front of us.
Yes. So these women were being paid by virtue of...
Commission. Yo. It's like, for me, it sounds a little bit like those people who get paid by tips.
Yes.
The tipping being your only form of income. If you don't get tipped at a restaurant, that's it. Make sure you get tipped. Otherwise, you're not getting anything home.
And then over and above that, it's also similar to those that if you don't produce something, farm workers, because even the human rights attorneys who are assisting here said it actually is reminiscent of farm workers, how they also get paid. So they were being paid by virtue of commission. Yet they were permanent employees. It was not a situation of a contract or a situation wherein you are, I don't know, like as you know.
So
what I
sometimes
mean?
The payslip comes back and it says zero.
Yes, yes. Sometimes they don't even have a payslip. All they knew is that this is how much I'm supposed to be getting. If I don't work hard to get this amount of money, it means I'm not getting paid. That was the beginning and end of everything. So now the
what was this business?
Isn't it a clothing?
Yes, it's a clothing store. Wholesaler.
Yes. So they were taken to court, but I think they approached the Human Rights Commission. I mean, maybe hearing shows such as this one, and then they're like, "Nah, man, we are not being treated right here." And then they approached the human rights attorneys, who then assisted them to lodge their complaint in the CCMA. And then this is when the unfair labor practice matter was then lodged with the CCMA, because we're not claiming unfair dismissal or anything of the sort, just unfair labor practice. The minimum wage at the time that this matter was at the CCMA was not what it is now. I think it was still on 11 rand or something like that. And excuse me. And then the CCMA, the commissioner, looked at the papers, and the company obviously defended all of these things and said that they were in the right, and the commissioner...
People knew what they were getting themselves into.
Correct, correct. And then the commissioner said, be that as it may...
It's wrong.
Your contract, your code of conduct, your policies do not supersede the law. The LRA is the law. The government has issued that this is the minimum pay.
The problem, though, Ntabiseng, is that... You have people who advocate for any work.
Yes.
Including political parties,
correct,
by the way. Work, any work. This idea that we need to abide by certain laws is going to make it difficult for labor to bring in, you know, new workers and so on. And the pressure of I suppose, those who are unemployed to do something, to get something.
Yes.
And often not knowing that even if this is an opportunity, you also have rights.
Correct.
And people cannot be... It's abusive, and it's against the labor laws of this country.
In all forms. In all forms. And I think you've said this before, in that people are always scared to lose whatever sort of income that they have. So they choose to just cower and keep quiet with what they are going through. The commissioner was like, no. Looking at the time that they've been working for 3 years in the company, the minimum wage for this year was this, for that year was this, for this year it was that, you will back pay them.
Oftentimes what you hear, if one of them had gone to the CCMA, for instance, what you often hear is that, and you've been at the CCMA, you know how this thing works, they would say, I, as an individual who's been unfairly treated, go to the CCMA, present my case, and oftentimes I'm met with a legal representative of the company, far more superior than I in their understanding of the law, somebody who's well paid. Sometimes it's six representatives who are just here to deal with me. And you often get the sense that the commissioners themselves are not necessarily fair because I'm just the person who came here looking for fairness and didn't know that I was going to be met by this, you know, this entourage of legal representatives and people then not being able to bypass that to get what is rightfully theirs.
Yes. So in terms of Rule 25 of the CCMA rules, not every matter requires legal representation, right? The main purpose of the CCMA was to fast track matters, unlike when we're going to court
all the time.
So the point is, let's get this thing sorted as quickly as possible to get people the kind of relief that they need. So now, what employers do is that they bring in their HR representative or the employer relations person who's appeared in more than 100 CCMA matters.
Who can recite that thing backwards?
Exactly. They may not have an LLB, they may not be an admitted attorney, but the fact that they have this amount of experience means that I, coming in as a layperson, I am far inferior to both the legal, the HR person and the commissioner. But now the rules say that this particular matter, as the applicant, I have to make an application in terms of Rule 25 to request that I be legally represented. And then the commissioner now has a discretion to decide, maybe
not
you
necessary.
Do. Exactly. And then what happens in that instance? The person is hearing jargon that they don't understand, that they've never heard before, but the HR representative has heard it numerous times. They know exactly what to do. They've been trained on it. They may, like I said, they may not be admitted, but they know exactly what it is that's happening in there. That's the part that where the unfairness usually comes in.
And what's the advice then, Tabi Singh, for those who, as you said, you know, yes, will have the right to have a legal representative, but are not necessarily, you know, afforded that?
Yeah. So what I do know now is that legal aid, it didn't used to before, but now it does. The one in Fox Street now, it now assists with labor matters. Go
okay.
There are attorneys there who are equipped to assist you. I think year before last, I found out that the legal aid in Krugersdorp was also looking to
assist.
Correct. But apart from that, go to your nearest law clinics, go to see
universities.
There are students and also qualified attorneys there who will be able to at least advise you. So what you need to put in the back of your head is that once the misconduct or whatever it is that happens, you have 30 days to refer the matter to the CCMA. Take those 30 days to use to go
look for the place where you'll be able to get assistance.
Correct.
Affordable assistance.
Yes. And if you are able to afford legal representation, see one quickly and then let the discuss all of these things with this legal representative. And then once the application in terms of Rule 25 is made and the commissioner says, nah, I don't even want you in the room for that matter, your attorney can remain within the building. And whenever you feel like, I'm not understanding what's happened, you are entitled to a break so that you can go and engage with your attorney. So that you can write things down and say...
Okay.
Yes.
So you're entitled to say, stop. I can't, I don't understand.
Yes.
Can we come back?
Yes.
Can I seek some advice?
Yes. They should give you that time and then you go discuss or debrief with your attorney who's sitting in another room or whatever. And then they tell you what next, what you should look out for.
Because Ntabi saying what sometimes happens is the sense of pressure that a person is given to...
Always.
Okay, let's decide now. Let's are you accepting or are you not accepting? You know, this is the offer and you know, take it or leave it type thing. You can say no, I'm not taking this
Correct.
Now. I'll think about it and I'll
Correct.
Come back. Okay.
So every time you go to the CCMA, even if you've gone through conciliation, when the matter is now set down for arbitration, commissioners always have to go back to conciliation to see if it can be sorted. So conciliation doesn't involve attorneys. It's just a What can we do? Mm. How many months do you want? And all of that. And then somebody's offered 5 months. Mm. Maybe it's not even nearly enough, or they feel like they can get a better deal. You're entitled to say no. So the commissioner has to give you the pros and cons of saying yes to the offer and also saying no to the offer and what arbitration may end up being. But what I always see when you read the transcripts, when the matter is now going on review, you see that when some commissioners are very patient with unrepresented persons, they tell you that at this stage it's cross-examination. This is what cross-examination means. This is what you expect you to say. Mm. We will try and guide you as best as we can, because they also have to remain impartial and not act like they're representing this one person. But also with that, there are other commissioners that are like, but sir, you've heard what has been said. Why aren't you answering the question? This person cannot follow in the manner that you would want them to follow. If there was an attorney present, you wouldn't be asking these questions at the end of the day. Commissioners are admitted attorneys. Some are acting judges. Some are magistrates and all of those things. So it's people who are used to adjudicating. And this lingo or this jargon is so, it's like at the tip of their tongue. So...
yeah. Sure. Here's a heartbreaking one from Rorisang. Hello, Kaya. I was told I'm being retrenched on the 12th of February. And it was said that I was to give me options. I think that's what they are trying to say, that I should decide on what I want to take, retrenchment or mutual separation. Okay, so this person was given two options, it looks like. But the formal, in inverted commas, notice was on the 19th, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Today, I was told the 28th of February.
Yeah.
Is my last day. I think it's tomorrow.
Day after tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. Open vacancies in the company were only given to me on Monday. And today, given feedback that I don't qualify for those open vacancies, what would be the next steps for me in this instance? I think to go to the CCMA.
Well, let's hear this out. I wish you could have called, because it should be section 189.
I don't know if you're willing to give us a call. You know, maybe we can help you further. It may be easier if maybe you can give us a call. Let's try and see if we can get her on the line.
Yeah, because what I would like to find out, is it retrenchment based on operational requirements? Is it retrenchment because the business is not financially coping? Is it retrenchment due to her not being able to do certain work?
So it looks like a restructuring thing here.
Okay.
But it happens a lot. We've spoken about this.
Yes, yes.
Where you are pushed out of your job.
Mm.
And when you look at this timeline, it doesn't look good to me. You are told on the 12th that you are being retrenched. The notice was given on the 19th.
Yeah.
You are told that your last day is on the 28th. You're also told that you don't qualify for all the other open vacancies.
No.
Doesn't look
supposed to give you at least, if memory serves, per case law, I think it's 3 months for you to go and seek legal advice for the consultation process to happen. So it can't be a situation, here's a retrenchment letter, section 189A.
Your last day is the 28th.
No. It has to be a situation whereby it's something that has been an ongoing thing. So that's what I would like to know. Was it an ongoing situation before you got the letter on the 12th? If it was, you may not have much of a leg to stand on.
We've got her on the line. Which I think will assist. Rorisang, hello and welcome.
Hi, ladies. How are you?
Well, I mean, we're okay, Rorisang, but how are you, most importantly?
I'm floating.
Askies. Yeah, okay. Let's try and see if we understand your story, Rorisang.
Hi, Rorisang.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Do you mind speaking up just a little bit for us, Rorisang? We just can't hear you well.
Can you hear me now?
Much better, thank you.
My kid's phone, my phone, my papa phone is dead.
Sorry, man. We can hear you now.
So I had a question. Before they sent you the Section 189 notice on the 12th, was there an ongoing consultation between you and the employer?
No. Everything was just sprung on me on the 12th. So my so I was told that there is restructuring within the organization. Over and above that, my skill and department is no longer necessary within the business. And I just need to basically decide if I'd like to do the MSA route or just the retrenchment. I wasn't even giving any formal documentation. I had to actually ask on a follow-up session as well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is just, we are restructuring. Your department is not necessary. So we need to let you go because of now AI is being introduced in the business. Yet I was working on that.
Okay, so here's the problem. The term redundant sounds like it was used at some stage when it comes to your current position. There is no such thing in labor law that says that a company can restructure because a position or department is redundant. There's no such thing. I forgot my tablet at home. I was going to go to the specific section in the LRA that speaks towards this. I think it is section 189 sub.
Yes, they said it's section one.
Yeah, Mara. Even in that section, banka what they believe is going to work and benefit them, because all the section 189 sub 1 all the way to sub 10. So there's a lot of things that they're doing wrong, because there has to be a consultation process. So in other words, they need to allow you the opportunity to go back and forth with them to say, okay, you've offered me position X, Y, and Z. It is said that I don't qualify for it. What other position is there? Is there another department that I can work in? All of these things, exhaust all other measures before dismissal is the final route, because this, at the way it is, I can already label it as an unfair dismissal, because they're not giving you any other option apart from option A and option B. The consultation process has been skipped, and over and above that, they're using redundancy, and case law has already said that you cannot use that as a factor as the employer. Okay. So yeah, no, yeah, I wish I had my thingy with me so that I can give you the exact section that is applicable, that you can quote to them to say, no, we have at least 3 months for us to have this back and forth. What they're doing is not right.
What had you done in the meantime, Rorisang?
Please repeat that.
What had you done in the meantime?
So on my end, I basically just asked them, because I did check on our company site, what options I actually reached out to say, can I then apply for this specific position? And like I'm saying, only on the Monday, which is like the day before yesterday, they're like, okay, apply for these ones. But some of the requirements that they're mentioning in my sit-down with them are not mentioned on the actual job applications and so forth. And even the feedback I got is like, oh, you don't qualify because you don't have the experience. Yet I have some idea in what they require. I may not have the law degree for that, but it's something that I think they can teach me. You can, if I've worked in the company for a year and more, obviously I know some of the basics, if not most of the stuff that needed instead of going for an external person and so forth. But
can I ask, Rorisang, does it seem, and it's a difficult one because you are part of the issue, does it seem to you that this is an overhaul, restructuring, or it's targeted? And I know it feels personal to you, but are you the only one who's been retrenched? What's your sense of what's actually going on here?
I'm a one woman department in the organization.
Nah.
Oh wow.
No, we actually assisted a lady year before last who was in the exact same position, but eventually, because she felt that the place that she was at
toxic.
Yeah, she ended up taking a package that was far more higher than what she was offered, because she came to us for legal advice, and we gave her what the relevant sections and everything that is relatable to that, and they couldn't change. They had to confess that they're trying to get rid of her.
I know that it's difficult to stay in a place that has told you they don't want you, but did you have a sense that things weren't going well?
Treatment and behaviors only changed after the fact. That's the strangest thing. Before that, everything was fine.
And
it was like a slap in the face to try sacrifice.
Now that we're here, what would you like to see happen?
I think because of the treatment you get once things get started, and I don't fight. I'm one person, I don't fight. I just keep quiet and I move on. I say what I need to. But because I think I changed the tone and my approach, you say I can stand up for myself. I don't want to be there because then it's going to be end up being like a banter between, even if I do something small, like I mistype a word, it will target me for that, you know? So it's like, I just, for my peace of mind, I have children, I have a husband, I need to stay sane just to make sure that I can take care of myself and my family. So I'd rather be safe at home or out of that environment, if I could put it like that, than just putting myself back in the toxic space.
One more question. How long have you been employed there?
A year and
10 months. Oh, no. Okay. So the retrenchment package, when you're retrenched, they calculate 1 year equals 1 week. The retrenchment package is going to be very, very small. I was hoping you're going to give me
I also thought, push back a little bit, you'll get something out.
Yeah.
1 week.
Because even with the MSA, I felt it was like an insult in itself. So I thought, let's leave that one alone. Let's just use this, because then it gives me that option to have access to UIF as well.
Okay.
So
let me ask you this, Ntabi Singh. From where I'm standing, it's clearly targeted.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's actually called restructuring or retrenchment. Something here is going on. Can she use that?
Yes, she
can. For the basis of getting something more than just the 1 week.
Yeah, yeah. If at the end of our conversation, then tomorrow you go to work and then you have a discussion with them and say, no, per the LRA, this is the situation. I know that you cannot use... redundancy as an umbrella for a section 189. You need to have a back and forth with me. You need to give me a consultation.
Can I take another job in the business?
Yes. And if you're failing to do that, case law and also section 189 itself, it deems that as an unfair dismissal. You tell them that I will refer this matter to the CCMA for unfair dismissal, and then say, rather give me a package, maybe a 3 months. Okay. And see
something fair.
Yeah, give me. I know I've been working for a year, but the way this is happening, it's giving unfair dismissal. So therefore, I'm requesting let's part ways with 3 months or whatever, and then see what happens, because it doesn't sound right to me.
And if that doesn't work, you definitely go to the CCMA
straight up. Yeah,
Rorisa, I think go to the CCMA. She says she's not a fighter. You can hear in her voice. She sounds defeated. I think you must just go to the CCMA, Rosa. I think you must just go to the... No, I think she's got no fighting anymore. Just go to the CCMA. Because I can only imagine the daunting idea of going to face them tomorrow. No, just go to the CCMA. Go to the CCMA.
Yeah.
Yes,
I'm working from home today. And then I'll see them on Friday.
On your last day.
I
just need that.
Go to the CCMA. go to the CCMA. That's what you need to do. Just, just pull up those panties. Go to the CCMA. Go to the CCMA. Sorry, man.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Sure. Let's take a quick break. And the lines are open, 086-000-00959. Voice notes as well. Very welcome to send a voice note, even if you want to be anonymous. It's fine. I mean, we get it. Sometimes these things are quite sensitive. Ntabi Singh is here to take your legal questions on 063-688-0959. 26 minutes after 9 o'clock, 086-000-00959. You can send those voice notes on 063-688-0959. We are discussing legal matters with Ntabi Singh Dubazana. You have another matter that you want us to look at.
Yes. So there is a story in relation to... Are you all right? Okay.
One of those, something going into the wrong pipe.
Okay. All right. So a case whereby mom, unfortunately, ran over her child and the child died.
By mistake.
By mistake, yes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't intentional. So the question is around, what is culpable homicide? And how do we define culpable homicide in our law? So culpable homicide is basically the negligent killing of another human being. Operative word being negligent. It is not intentional. Intention equals murder. Negligence equals culp.
So is the issue the proving of the negligence?
That's correct. Mm. So with every single death docket, ne? Before the state decides whether or not it will be falling under the umbrella of culp or murder or premeditated murder, it has to go through an inquest. That's why you always hear in murder cases, it's an inquest docket. It's an inquest docket.
Yeah.
So now inquest is very informal, even though it is in front of a magistrate. It will be a situation where all the suspected people for this particular death will be put in front of a magistrate and then hear the versions of these different people. You are entitled to legal representation. Mm. But at that stage, it's not really that necessary because we're just trying to determine the percentage of your contribution to the death of this particular individual. And if after everything the magistrate says, nah, I can't really say that it isn't Ntabi Seng, it sounds like they're all equally there. They can decide to either not even turn the docket into any other thing and leave it as is, or all of them are going to be charged with either one of these crimes. So the purpose of an inquest is to determine who did it, and then was it intentional or not. Once that part is done, then you are formally charged. So in a culpable homicide situation, most of the time, you are not arrested because it's not like you are a horrible person that did this. You will get a subpoena. You will get your rights sheet wherein you're officially charged, and then you'll be subpoenaed to appear in court on a certain day. When you appear in court, your rights will be read to you, etc., but you're out on warning a great majority of the time. And then at that stage, once your attorney has received the docket, the copies of the docket, I mean to say, that's when we can enter in what you call plea agreements.
Mm.
That's why you hear most of the time people who are found guilty of culp, they usually have suspended sentences they hardly, if ever, go for a prison sentence. Because remember, all the state has to prove is 1% negligence on your part. They don't have to prove 100% or you went saying just 1% that you failed to keep a proper lookout, for example. In this particular case, you did not look where
that's
your child is.
That's very tricky. 1% is such a
very
slim
small
margin.
Yeah. So that's all that they need. Because the level in criminal law is higher than civil, so it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
So that's why it is that minimal.
Except you remain with the criminal record.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately. That's the downside of it.
So if you think you're going to take maybe a sip of wine or two or three,
mm-hmm.
and you want to just drive home quickly from a dinner party,
mm.
and then you knock somebody over, it more than exceeds the 1%
of
negligence.
Yes, and in fact, you're now looking at more than one charge.
Yeah.
Now you're looking at drunken driving.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, in terms of the National Road Traffic Act, your blood alcohol level, if you are not a person that drives the public, should be less than 0.05 milligrams.
It's also in relation to your own body mass.
Yeah.
Because what I can tolerate and what you can tolerate,
very different.
It's very different on that assessment as well.
And one thing that we've said this a few times, but when you get stopped at a traffic stop and they breathalyze you, the breathalyzer is not binding. It's not, it has nothing to do with anything that's going to go to court. However, the JMPD use the breathalyzer to go to determine whether or not they should detain you to go and draw your blood. Ne? And if when you blow in the breathalyzer, your thingy is sitting at 0.94 milligrams, then they can ask you to park on the side. According to Section 65, if I'm not mistaken, or 68, one of the two, of the National Road Traffic Act, and also according to the Criminal Procedure Act, they can draw your blood without your consent. Please understand that.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Anonymous is in Johannesburg. Anonymous, good evening and welcome.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Anonymous?
All right, thank you. I'm calling from Joburg. I would like some advice relating to employment and trade unions.
Go ahead.
Yes. I'm working in the wholesale and retail sector.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the management class.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that has always bothered me, or rather recently has become a burden in terms of understanding legalities of trade unions, is that a lot of my colleagues have been recently dismissed. Yes, on other fair charges. But on other charges, it's more towards maybe an ill intention to get rid of those individuals. But that has been mostly because people in the management are not part of the trade union.
Mm.
So we do understand that it's a constitutional right for people to be. To belong to a trade union. How can a group of those kind of people approach and that kind of situation where people are becoming unfairly dismissed, especially because that particular right of theirs, which is to belong to a trade union, is not observed or is not taken into consideration. And because of that, there's a lot of exploitation that is happening. So I'd like some few advice with that regards.
Okay. The trade union, is it active when their members are being sent, for example, to disciplinary inquiries, or when they go, specifically disciplinary inquiries, are they active in it?
There is a trade union where other staff belongs to, but management don't have any trade unions that they belong to, and there's a lot of exploitation due to that. So how can and people approach that kind of a matter?
No, I think my question is this. Akira, you're saying that people are getting dismissed because they are affiliated with a trade union. Am I understanding you correctly?
I didn't get that right.
Are you saying that people are being dismissed because they are affiliated with a trade union?
No, not because they're affiliated.
Because they are not.
Yeah, them not being and part of a trade union, it makes it kind of
vulnerable.
Yes, vulnerable.
Okay, so they are being taken advantage of because they don't have representation.
Yes.
Yes, and besides that, exploitation might be coming from a lot of areas, like your working hours, like your salaries, like your overtimes, and all of that.
That should not be part of a trade union thing. That should be part of the code and conduct and policy of the employer. So when you sign your contract with, for example, Kaya, right? You're a permanent employee here and you're in management. You have exactly what your working hours are. You have exactly what or at least you ought to. You ought to have what your salary is, what your working hours are, and there must be a clause that speaks to what overtime looks like if you're going to be requested to work longer hours. There must be a clause that speaks to when the employer can deduct monies and based on what, but it can never, ever, ever go against the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And if it does go over that, it has to be per agreement between employer and employee, because failure for the employer to adhere to the contract is what we call unfair labor practice. And therefore, they are already breaking the employment agreement, and which will then make them liable to the employee to pay whatever it is that they are taking. For example, if they are taking from the salary, or if they are reducing your work hours without you talking to you. Now, With all of that being said, the employer still has to have what we call a code of conduct or a rule or a policy that everybody in the workplace knows that this is what we do. And if we fail to do this, the employer is entitled to X, Y, and Z in terms of disciplinary action. So with that, that is your basis. So I would suggest that you take a look at the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, take a look at the Code of Good Practice, particularly Schedule 8. It will tell you what it is you should expect from your employer. So that if such a situation comes up again, because remember, when they call you for your disciplinary inquiry for whatever misconduct they will be calling you for, in that notice, 48 hours, they give you an option to have representation by either a trade unionist or a colleague. Yes. So if you're going to call your colleague to come and assist you because you're not part of a trade union, you guys have to be on the same page. You need to know at least minimum what the basic conditions of employment say, what the LRA says, which is the Labor Relations Act. And in that 48 hours, if you can, once you receive that notice, see somebody who is a legal representative who can tell you what it is you should look out for based on... what is this, the charges that you would be facing?
Okay, no. I think that is clear. Thank you very much. Another one is more of the enforcement. I think it is stipulated and it's clear on the code of conduct what every employee is expected out of. And that is clear. It's in line with the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
It's in line with the Occupational Health and Safety. It's in line with the law.
Mm.
But there is no enforcement there's no much enforcement because a particular group is not belonging to any bargaining council that enforces this laws to every employee and that's where the vulnerability comes from.
Mm.
And the question was more as to how do we then approach this particular matter to say, okay, now employees are being exploited, and particularly this group of employees are being exploited because them not belonging to a trade union.
Okay. So the same code of good practice that I'm telling you about under Schedule 8, it talks about, one, in order for a dismissal to be deemed substantively unfair, right? Because there's procedural unfairness and there's substantive unfairness in terms of dismissals. So with substantive fairness, what needs to be determined is there a rule within the employer's code of conduct? The answer is yes. Is it expected that Ntabi Singh would know what this rule is? If the answer is yes, great. And then the third question is it being applied consistently with all employees? If the answer is no, then we start saying that it means Ntabi Singh's dismissal is what we deem substantively unfair, because why did you not dismiss Pimelo in the same manner who did the same thing, yet you are now penalizing me for this? So that's why, Kere, when you have time, download those things, look at them, so that the ones who are vulnerable, who are not part of a trade union, have this information with them and they can challenge whatever charges are being brought their way.
So how does one then challenge without being targeted, especially in an environment where merit dismissals that are happening unfairly?
Yeah.
So then how do we approach this matter? Because I can safely agree to say 90% of all of this group of people, which is the management, that are not belonging to any shaking and are vulnerable to anything. And according to the Sectoral Determination Act of the whole 7-3-10, all employees who are non-executive directors are able to join trade unions. But nobody wants to, because of their afraid, firstly, of the consequences. Okay, as a manager, I've always had the opportunity to initiate cases to charge staff, but recently there was one colleague of mine, also part of the management, asked me to be present, which was my first. Mostly, yes, it's trade unionists that represent people in hearings and all of that. But when I recently had the opportunity to now represent somebody as part of a duty of people who are in the unions, that's where I literally saw the gap.
Mm.
And I did feel being a little bit targeted, but I had my things covered. But yeah, that's where I'm very much more concerned.
And how are you coping now with the being targeted?
Well, I do my job right. I haven't given them any new.
It's called Koe, no man.
Yeah, to do that. So I've recently had that opportunity to represent, to defend, more than to dismiss. And that's why I saw the gap. And it was so concerning. And the vulnerability was also so much that it needs some really legal advice as to how do we approach this. And so that we don't fall victim of what is happening.
Unfortunately, for the being targeted for speaking out and knowing the law, there's no formula as yet that has been developed to protect you from that. But what you can always do is that you can always refer the matter to the CCMA every single time that you feel targeted. Section 186, subsection 1 and 2, those give you the platform to refer matters for unfair labor practice. So every time, because I was representing Thabiseng, I'm now being targeted, you go like, hey, I'm giving you notice. If you continue like this, I'm referring this matter to the CCMA. While you're still employed, you don't have to wait to be dismissed.
It must be documented.
Everything, yeah.
So it's me who's documenting it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
Anonymous. All right, should we take a quick break? Let's do that. And you can still dial in 086-000-0959. You can send voice notes as well. You don't have to tell us who you are, but your matter does matter to us. 063-688-0959. Legal Matters with Ntabiseng Dubazana. You can call in on 086-000-0959, or you can send a voice note as well on 063-688-0959. Ben is in Brakpan. Hello, Ben.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to find out something here. I'm part of this transport industry. Specifically, what I wanted to find out is if someone has got, say, an interdict from court against, say, maybe the police, to be part and find that maybe I was not part of the court process when they were applying to court to get that interdict. But now, in terms of the enforcement of that interdict, or to be part of what they sort of like warn against the state from, what should I do or what can I do?
So an interdict is not final. It's what we call a rule nisi. So which means there has to be a retain... Let me try that again.
It's called a what?
A rule nisi.
Okay.
So...
Why don't
you know the tear? So there has to be a return date for that interdict, ne? In order for that interdict to be made final. So an interdict is divided into two parts. Part A is that we are stopping you from driving from your home to Kaya. And for that to be made an order of court, there's something else that needs to be dealt with. So what I would suggest is that you go, because that interdict has a case number. Go and see what's in the actual file and see if that rule nisi has been, it has been adhered to by the court. In other words, the applicant has gone back to the court and said part B has now been satisfied. As a result, we want the interdict to not be interim anymore, to be final. And if it was final, then this particular interdict, if you're holding it as a final interdict, you need to see if the application was made as a direct final interdict or it started off as a rule nisi. And if it did start as a rule nisi, you can challenge that and apply for a rescission of judgment, because you can say that you were never served got the rule nisi application, because it's a must for you to be served as a result, because it's going to affect you in one form or another. I don't know if that helps at all.
Maybe just to add a little bit of detail, because maybe the case has been on the news, I can maybe mention it.
Okay.
This is regarding Vanuatu.
Okay.
that they got an interdict against the Tshwane police from impounding their vehicles. I don't know if you heard of something like
Yes.
So I'm asking just as someone who was outside the application process, because I remember that they did invite people through, but I realized that I was a bit far from that. So I just wanted to find out that in a case like that, maybe to get a similar advantage like the one that they got, the only thing one can do coming from outside.
Got you. So you are saying, yes, you are not formally part of this, but you would also want to be protected.
Most definitely.
You said the matter is gone on review.
Okay, it's gone from court and we read it from the news and we heard about it on the news as well to say there is a story and obviously they resumed work and stuff like that.
No, I think the best way is to go to court with the case number and see what's actually in the paperwork. And if it's in the High Court, it's easier because you can just go on case lines or court online. So our matters now in the High Courts, we do them online. So it becomes easier because without the paperwork, I don't know how to properly advise you on how to get protected, because I would love to see what the notice of motion was saying, that like the reasons why this application was made in the first place, and to see that even though you were not actively part of the matter, does it touch you? And in if it does, to what extent? And if it does, is there a remedy for you? For this thing not to touch you. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Okay, now let me try and see what I can do specifically from accessing the court papers.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks so much for calling. All right, so let's go back to before we wrap up. By the way, folks, we've got a little bit of time before we wrap up. So if you want to quickly sneak in your question, you can do that. 086-000-0959. We were just concluding the matter of homicide.
Yes.
Culpable homicide.
Yeah.
So even though one can accept that by and large it may have been an accident,
mm-hmm.
but you were negligent.
Yes.
In other words, you rode over the child because you didn't look in mm-hmm. the mirror,
mm-hmm.
not because you were intending to do that.
Yes.
You're still liable.
Correct. In fact, the term that they use is that you did not keep a proper lookout for your surroundings. Excuse me. And
the license book, what's it called?
K53.
Is it still K53?
I don't know. Are we too old?
K53 says, look, look, and look again.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
Okay, Rick.
Look again. Yeah.
See? And if you didn't look for the third time, you're
there's
liable.
The 1%
right there.
Yeah. And so yeah, that's what we look at and see that this is the situation. And also what also works in your favor as the person who's accused, if that person is not your family, like in this situation the child is the mother's, but it's a third party, if you contributed towards the funeral, contributed, all of these things are taken into consideration when making your sentence lighter. That's what we look at.
You know, can I just ask on a serious note now, whether to what extent some of the rules would be regarded as negligible in this instance? Let me give an example.
Mm.
I mean, that K53 thing, we make light of it, but it has got so many steps.
Yeah.
Before you're supposed to get into the car, you're supposed to check even the tire pressure, for mm-hmm. goodness sake, all those things, ne? And, I mean, who does that? Who checks the tire pressure every day they go into the car?
Yeah.
You know, chances are that you will probably do that if there is an indication that something is wrong.
Is wrong,
but you're not likely to do that every day.
Mm.
In a case like that, where, because sometimes when things go wrong, it's only when things are pointed out to you to say, in fact, your tire pressure was not correct, mm-hmm. or I don't know, your tires were not new enough, or whatever the case may be. Is there a scale to what is negligence in that sense, as opposed to you just didn't look properly at your mirror?
There's no scale.
Okay.
But those things are considered. The state will bring all those things and say the tire pressure was like this and that. I just want to let you guys know that driving in terms of the National Road Traffic Act doesn't mean you being on the road and actually driving. As long as the key is in the ignition and the engine is on, even if you're stationary, it's considered driving.
Oh.
So as soon as soon as you start the car, you're driving.
Let's quickly get this anonymous from Soweto. Anonymous, good evening and welcome.
Hello, Kev.
Hi, how are you, Anonymous?
I'm fine, how are you?
Good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's my maker, yeah. There's a estate. It has two properties.
Yes.
One property is those old properties.
Yeah.
And the other property is the new one.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Four siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Two siblings are located in a new property.
Yeah.
And then other two siblings are allocated in a old property.
Yeah.
Okay.
But one sibling, which is allocated in the new property, is also in Zegeta.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the estate was left with a bank before.
Yeah.
So the Zegeta refused to cooperate because she was staying in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was enjoying staying in the house.
What did you want the executor to do?
Pardon?
What did you want from the executor? When you say the executor didn't want to cooperate, in what way?
In fact, she didn't want to comply because they wanted her to submit the papers for the other house to be. Yeah, they told her to report the estate because it was not reported, the old house.
Is there a will?
Yes, there is a will.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and the other one that was allocated to her to be sold according to the will.
The other one what?
I'm a bill.
It had to be sold according to the will.
Let's track back quickly. Lalwana, in a nutshell. You guys are fighting.
Excuse?
You guys, Lalwana, as siblings.
So this is the situation. In terms of the Administration of Deceased Estate Act, ne? Hai ba le bona hore executor is not doing right ka the deceased estate. La ne right a le lodge a complaint to the master ka the executor.
So le le deceased ka ne ka la o kopana le tso. So le le karula e ka re nauta e ben ka lo tsola lo ya eng.
It doesn't matter. Ha fela
to the LNP account.
It doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. When LND is a tuile kapocha, you can still challenge it. So if LND is a tuile, it's fine. When you still need to lodge a complaint, Hobani, the master doesn't know where there's issues. Utra and a hash about the LND. Yeah, so Zamaya and the lodge a complaint in the master. Let me show the master how to throw solo.
Problematic.
Yeah, and there is a specific section I just don't remember when I gave him. Melo la bonsora banning the executor ibila hile handlantle high in accordance to the will. Yeah, yeah, move. Georgie, guys, we have a visitor.
How you doing? Are you all good?
We're good.
Lovely. Just a quick one. I had to ask this one.
Yes, Prachi.
Hey, good little driving, or even if I'm parked. the act says I'm driving.
That's correct.
And then my woman and I got carried away.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, the thing was on. Yeah. And I was on as well.
Uh-huh.
So we got it on. No, we got it on.
See,
and we were parked. No,
at this point, this is where I sign off. And then I'm not part of the problem.
It's the last one. You guys always take 5 minutes of my show.
Okay. No, I'm just worried about the content.
No,
I'm not worried about time.
So all I'm asking is this. So if we're caught in the act and we are parked, your act says
get
we're
lock. I'm out.
Ignition
I'm going to leave George to continue.
On. This is an automatic car. It's in parking mode. And we're on.
In every sense of the word.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you saying your act catches me in the act and says what?
Yes. One, there's two charges.
The Libby's.
How?
Already the inter-
How much?
Get public indecent.
No. Well, if the public is not there,
It doesn't matter. Get public indecent.
Okay, fine. That one I hear.
And then
Maria driving.
Yeah, driving. Why is the car on in the
because
in the
things
middle of
can
the
go
act?
Wrong?
Because we are wise, and wise men and women change their minds.
Uh huh.
So the ignition was on with the intention to get going.
Yes.
But we got going in the other department.
But then it's negligent.
Exactly.
You're being irresponsible.
But it's in parking mode.
Doesn't matter.
It's parked.
But while you're on,
because things
a leg may hit
the
thingy, a hand may hit something in the car.
Someone may release a brake because busily on.
Yeah.
I get it on.
Yeah.
So
it's called the heat of the moment.
No.
Okay.
Bye.
Oh, what? Yeah, man.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.